Well, here we are back for another episode of the Christopher Scott Show, Friday to be exact. One of the things that we talk about is security, defense, defending your property, defending yourself. And I don't profess to be an expert in this area, but it is something that I know a little bit about. I'm a Marine combat veteran. And besides that, I would say very much self-taught. I could go through the whole history of my background and training in that regard. I think a lot of security really revolves around common sense. You hear me talk about, for example, making sure that you have adequate lighting. Nobody does. We do. We have adequate lighting, and it's so easy to do. It really is. What do we spend? Certainly a couple of bucks. We have a nice system that, I don't say a system, but we have a separate set of floodlights with a switch right outside of the bedrooms. All of our bedrooms come out into like a central area. You come out, anybody comes out of the bedroom, you hear something outside, boom, you throw those lights on. Huge for security, just that one little element. Think about that in terms of situation. You know, in our house, you know, from our bedroom to our furthest door, we have several. This is a security concern where you have multiple access points that could be pretty far away and maybe on another level to boot, meaning that somebody could get in, you'd never hear them coming in. And this is something that you really have to think about. Go study the art of war, time and distance. You want to keep distance between you and your enemy and have as much time to react as possible. And so for people that think that they're going to keep a pistol in the drawer and that's their home defense system, once somebody's in the house, you got a big, big problem. Your life is in danger. And if it's multiple people that we're going to talk about right now, you got a big problem. So with that laying the groundwork, let me tell you what's going on. First of all, the FBI has said that the United States crime rate is still dropping, according to FBI data. And I say, well, isn't that something? Let's see what they say here. It was fascinating, some of the comments. This is our government that's supposed to be, you know, working for us and responding to our needs, not the other way around. And they say, why does the public think that crime's going up? There's definitely more disorder in the cities than there was 5 years ago, said one expert. Oh, one expert. What makes this one expert the expert? People confuse disorder and crime. What was this person an expert in? Propaganda? You're confusing disorder and crime. What do you mean? Oh, yeah, when they're burning the cities. That's disorder. That's not crime. You see? So crime's actually going down. The new FBI data confirms previous indications that crime in the United States declined significantly in 2023, continuing a post-pandemic trend and bellying widespread perceptions that crime is rising. It's just the stupid Republicans clamoring about something that isn't happening again. And the news reports simply don't support it. Certainly not here in Philadelphia. They've stopped reporting. I don't hear as much of the numbers. Oh, the 700th gun crime. Now, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how they take this propaganda and spin it when they want to create more gun laws to enforce against law-abiding citizens. And then you'll be hearing them sing a very different tune. If crime is dropping, then what's the point? Why do we need any new gun laws? What's the problem? They'll give you a different argument, don't worry. But let me tell you some of the things that are going on in our country right now. The mismanagement, the political chaos is allowing an environment that's absolutely ripe for crime, and everybody should see that coming, should have saw it coming. What else did you expect? There's been many, many warnings. And here's another one for you. I only see it getting worse. And you start thinking about where you've got to defend yourself to get to work or home or to get food or whatever the case might be. Security is huge. You know, you take this stuff lightly. And I was talking about this yesterday. I was talking about the political chaos. We're running a big risk. You know, do I think a civil war is likely? I don't think people even know what that means. And I don't even know what it would mean in a situation like this. There's not a North-South united front. You'd say, well, the states would have to make a decision and team up. And well, What's that looking like exactly? I don't know. Nuts, really. But you look at the security situation, I say the same thing. The breakdown in security will mean a breakdown in everything. Okay? Think about Haiti. When you don't have some semblance of order, public order, what happens? Well, let's step back a second and take a look at what's going on in the world. We no longer had the world's police force, you'd say, the United States enforcing territorial waters everywhere. Look at what's happening with Taiwan, Ukraine, whatever you want to agree with the mismanagement on that. Serious upheaval, but that's the little stuff. You know, look at what's going on with shipping in the Middle East and how that's been disrupted. And if those problems continue to get worse, if it continues to interfere with other types of transportation, they say, well, so what? Okay, well, so what? These same tactics can be used domestically. And so, for example, in Minnesota, where there was some, you got a huge Muslim population. I'm just using this by way of example, by the way. And I think that there's probably a huge Muslim contingent in about every major city at this point. There certainly is in Philadelphia. A very unsafe area, ironically enough. And, you know, suppose they say they want to disrupt whatever. Say here in Philadelphia, use it as a better example. I know it better. And they say, we're going to start closing down bridges, however means they're going to do that. And they start overwhelming the police, and maybe the National Guard come in. And, oh, okay. Well, in the meantime, what happens to the food trucks that need to get into the city? What happens to the oil deliveries, the gasoline deliveries, the medicine deliveries? Everything becomes disrupted in a big, big way and a lot more expensive at the same time. So this is why I say to you, I see the situation getting worse, and I'm not the type of person that talks like this, but as it continues to get worse, it continues to get closer to a tipping point, right? Now, there may certainly be an ebb and a flow. You know, crime accelerates, it backs off, the security threat is higher or less on any given day. You know, when it's snowing, for example, you don't hear about a lot of home break-ins when it's snowing. Fascinating, really, right? You don't hear about a lot of protests when it's snowing. So you factor all that in. All this in the art of war, weather, all part of the war, a factor that nobody gets to control. We can only react to it, take advantage of it. I don't want to get into that whole philosophical debate. I'll send people zinging. Let me tell you what's going on. So while the FBI is going to say to you, oh, everything's great. Really? Okay. LA is in a battle with a spate of burglary tourists, they want to call it. I love the way the media puts names on things. And I get it. You have to be creative today to make things work. On the Project Chaos show, we did a show called the Hook Turtle Whistleblowers. And it was fascinating. I hope you get a chance to check it out. Hook Turtle Whistleblowers over there at Project Chaos. It's a real term, and it was a real show, and it was fascinating. It was two whistleblower interviews we did, follow-up podcasts, a three-part series. Phenomenal work, my friends. I hope you can go check it out at projectchaos.org. But getting back on point, the FBI saying, everything's fine, crime is actually dropping. Well, apparently in L.A., the burglary tourists are causing a bit of a, what was the word that other, they said, you're confusing crime and disruption or whatever. Okay, thanks. Thanks for pointing that out. You know, crime is when you're getting your face bashed in. Disruption is when they're just robbing you from the back of the bank, I guess. I don't know how they say all that. So now the LA police form a task force to counter these foreign gangs that they say are exploiting U.S. visa system. Why do they need visas when people are just coming in here and illegally walking right through? These medications could make driving dangerous. I bring this up on the security perspective. I don't know if you know this. I got rear-ended by a woman who was high as a kite on pills, admitted it herself. And fortunately, I was able to heal from that as best I can tell at this point. But it's a real issue with the driving. I see, you know, not just the drugs, but the distraction with the phones, people not knowing how to drive, and it's getting more and more dangerous to get around. What are some tactics that you can use to deal with that? Wow, we could do a whole show on that, right? I have literally made changes to my driving patterns due to what I see on the road. There's a road here, for example, 309. It'll take you from basically out of the city of Philadelphia, right past our house, all the way to a place called Montgomeryville and clear up through the state if you wanted to take it all the way. It's an old road. It's been around a long time. Obviously, it's been modernized. It's a highway. It's not a dirt road or something like that. But I don't drive it anymore because the driver's coming out of the city, and it's my observation, appears a lot of them are immigrants, and they drive like complete stinking animals. Now, I don't really care, you know, so much directly, but I do care in regard to, you know, the safety of my family, and I don't want the aggravation. I'm just trying to get where I'm going, be dealing with getting in an accident. I don't know. It's a bigger and bigger problem. These medications could make driving dangerous. I don't see any efforts really being taken to combat this problem of driving while high. It's my observation. I see the problem getting worse. I see it adding to the mayhem. Look at what the establishment or whatever you want, the machine. Let's just say the machine. I don't feel like getting into politics today. I don't trust either party. How about if we go there? I'm going to make up our own. They make up their terms. Let's make up our own. Swamp. I say machine. What does the machine want? They want to get rid of vehicles. They don't want people driving. They say, hey, you know, you poor people, take public transportation. You shouldn't even have the right to drive. That's how they're thinking. So what do? They let it become a real mess. They say, oh, you see? You see? And that's only part of the problem, by the way. Another problem with older people driving that we could get into. But I won't, for the sake of discussion. The bottom line is these medications, you know, the marijuana thing has become so prevalent. Here the governor's talking about legalizing recreational marijuana to pay for his overbloated budget. So I don't know. What else is going on? COVID vaccines found to cut the risk of heart failure, blood clots following virus infections. How do they know? They're basically putting out this pro-vaccine, you know, look, they're actually good for you. Yeah, okay. Sell me another one. Where's the data coming from? They don't even know. It's ridiculous. All right, back to the security issue. Brooklyn residents protest proposed men's-only homeless shelter in their neighborhood. I have talked about this problem many, many times. And you say, oh, wow, what if it's a woman's shelter? Would it be okay then? Would that be less threatening, women and children? I suppose it would be. The way these laws have gotten perverted with our zoning, it's very, very interesting, and I've used this example. It could happen to us here, really, the way the laws are. The home right next to us could be turned into a group home where you could have recovering whatevers. They could be recovering drug addicts that have pedophilia charges that you wouldn't even know really necessarily. I guess they have to register and divulge certain things, I guess. But I'm not sure that you, unless you were really looking for it, you would know. And I've used this story, and I've seen this happen, by the way. So you get guys at, you know, somebody's house, and they get a couple guys out there smoking, and the daughters pull up, and next thing you know, they get to know each other. Then their buddies dating your daughter kind of get sucked into it. This is the stuff that goes on. And it really breeds big problems. I say this like the homeless problem. You know, I understand there's a problem. I understand that we should have a way of dealing with it. I've been critical of the county here not providing a shelter of some kind. But just because there's a problem doesn't entitle them to sleep wherever the hell they want. And safety has to be a consideration, in my opinion. If we don't have safety and security, we don't have any freedom. You can talk about democracy, republic, military, borders, all you want. If we don't have safety and security, without that established, there's not much else to discuss. The Brooklyn residents unhappy. They should be unhappy. Unilever apparently is a company that owns Ben & Jerry's. I didn't know that. I thought it was the Ben & Jerry's dudes. They're spinning off some of the ice cream business to cut 7,500 jobs. Yeah, so much for these leftist organizations being pro-labor, right? But as these problems, you hear about this bank relating this to the security issue. You heard about the Tyson Foods supposedly was favoring illegal immigrants, not giving jobs to white people. I think there's more to that story potentially. But how long before people that can't get work, they can't get food, they can't get around, you run the risk of a serious breakdown. Not saying it's imminent, but it's possible we keep going this direction. If that's not enough, Putin warns the West a Russia-NATO conflict is just one step away from World War III. Isn't that kind of where we're already at? And this is what I started to say yesterday. You know, we could wake up on any given day, the incredible chaos in front of us from so many different angles. The security problems that it creates, the financial security problems, the practical security problems. And what happens if it reaches a serious tipping point that, you know, you literally have to provide community security? I'm going to talk about that a little bit here in a second and solutions to all this, the driving, all of it. Ukraine war briefing, Putin will not commit to hold on to power. He's not going to stay in office forever. Zelensky came out and bashed him for that, you know, calling Putin undemocratic for the, quote, sham election that they had. And the fact of the matter is Ukraine isn't holding elections at all. This is really hilarious. And then you have our elections here, which should be our main concern. And I look and I say, have elections become a thing of the past? Ask yourself seriously right now. You step back and you look at the problems with elections, the effort it now takes to go vote and how often we have to go. It's become a bit of a grind. How little our vote seems to matter anymore. And how disinterested people are in the whole thing. Yeah, my vote doesn't matter. I mean, you had a time when you had generations ready to fight wars over this issue. Now, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter how I vote. And I find all that to be pretty fascinating, that this acquiescing to this mayhem, really, and this giving up of our rights. But maybe I'm wrong about all that. Maybe this new digital era and this era of little interest in community service and things like that, and people really just looking to take care of themselves. I don't know. Is the age of voting done? I said, why don't we do it online? And I was saying that back in 2020, come up with a secure online method. And I don't believe it exists. I believe paper ballots, one day of voting, verified ID only. I do believe it should be a national holiday and or on a weekend to give as many people the possibility to vote as possible. I think the absentee rules need to be very, very limited, very, very strict. And I base this on, you know, what I've witnessed myself going on in the election system. But it's crazy when you step back and you think about it all. Let's go back to the security thing a second, all right? And I want to try and just give you some things to think about. I'm hoping, I haven't interviewed Butch Erskine from Hope for Survival for a while. And he had reached out to me last week, I guess. And I was really tied up. I said I was trying to get in touch with him this week, which I haven't done yet. And I'm hoping to do that real soon. And maybe we can get him on, do an interview, which I would probably do on the Project Chaos channel over there, but I would certainly share it over there, over here as well. Let me just give you my shtick real quick on survival, all right? And we may do a survival podcast. I've been tossing this around. I actually have it all teed up. Rugged Survivor. I have a book mostly written. I have a lot of content, a logo design, and all that. Kind of exciting. I don't know if I want to do it as a separate podcast or an extension of the Christopher Scott Show. And I'd welcome your feedback on that. Should I just bake those episodes into, you know, Rugged Survivor episodes into the Christopher Scott Show? That's a possibility. I could replay the Project Chaos episodes out on this podcast channel. That's all a possibility, I guess. Give me some feedback on that. I don't want to blow you up with, like, you know, 100 different things you can listen to. I thought keeping it segregated would be a little bit better, but maybe I'm wrong about that. Tell me your thoughts. Separate podcast, or would you rather me replay it all? For example, I keep saying, hey, go check out the shows at Project Chaos. I could simply post them out here for you. Give me a little feedback on that. You can email me at info@ChristopherScottShow.com. Would putting more content out here on this podcast feed, would you appreciate that? I have control over that, and I would value your input in that regard. All right. Back to the security, rugged survivor. Here's my survival shtick and how it relates to security. Think of needs and time, and that's how you want to plan it out. So, you know, and there's a lot of different shticks people bring to the survival community. You definitely take time to hear the different perspectives. But here's mine, just very simply. You'll see where people panic. You want to avoid that. So you want to prepare in advance. You're not, you know, trying to run out to Costco when everybody else is too, and just with no plan, just loading up a shopping cart, and somehow it makes you feel better that you got plenty of paper towels. And it's laughable, really, if you know anything about preparation and survival. You know, they got a couple of cases. Oh, we got 4 cases of water. We'll be good. And dude, you're going to be done in like 2 days with that. And God forbid there's an injury, you got to wash something, and you're going to be doing it with those bottles of water. You think you got so much water. No thought at all. How much water do you need? I mean, for our family, just for basic drinking, I figure, drinking and cooking, at least, and basic maybe brushing teeth, but not even really washing up, at least 3 gallons a day. That's no toilet, sanitation needs, or showering, or any of that. 3 gallons a day. And you think about that. Do we have a stock of water? You betcha, inside and outside. What do you mean by that? Well, if I needed quickly, you know, to get 100 gallons of water, could I do it? Yeah, I could do it really quickly. We have siphons, buckets, whatever we need, access to water supply. We store some outside. It's huge. But anyway, here's my point on the survival shtick. It does you no good to have a year's worth of water and no food. You say, great, I get it. I'm going to get food and water. Great. You got to think about it with all things. And here's a little saying for you. You can die in 3 hours from exposure. You can go about 3 days without water and about 30 days without food. All right. Now, it might be difficult and definitely take its toll in each of those cases. But the point being exposure, and I constantly say this, heat, heat, heat. And my wife said, we're in the desert. Yes, the heat needs are different. But you might want to make sure you have a wool blanket on hand. And I just checked the other day. We do have several backup wool blankets, too. I'm a big believer in that. I think it's got to be a huge part of your preparation. Simple wool blankets. They get wet. They still retain their heat value. If you have to move, you can take them with you inside, outside. Wool blankets. I actually think we should probably add a couple more of those, to be honest with you. And that's for that exposure reason. I'm big on the exposure because if you hear most of the stories, that's how people end up dying, is from exposure. If you're traveling, in my travel packs, for example, I have a few hand and pocket warmers. And people, what are you going to do? Let me tell you get wet and cold and you start shaking to the point, you ever been so cold that you can't see straight? It hurts. And you get to that point and try navigating and thinking rationally. All you start thinking about is, I got to warm up whatever you got to do. You'll crawl into a septic tank if that's what it takes. I don't know about that. Maybe I went a little too far with that, but you get the idea. Exposure. Anyway, time and needs. You have medication. You have, you know, 3-year food supply and you don't have enough of your insulin. You're going to have a big problem. You say, well, I can't stock up on my medication for a year. Ah, then you got to plan differently. And I wouldn't say if there's one piece of the puzzle, you shouldn't do well to plan for everything else, that you say, hey, in a, you know, bad situation, I may be scavenging for medicine. Well, it's better than scavenging for everything. But I'm going to say in that situation, your plan should be more to bug out than the necessarily shelter in place. But I don't want to get into that detail right now. My point is, I'm a big believer in preparation and to make sure you're ready in advance, because once something happens, it's too late. And thinking about all the needs so that you have everything that you need. And having redundancy, like my brother Butch Erskine from Hope for Survival says, 1 is none, 2 is 1, 3 is 2. Guaranteed something's not going to work right. And you got to be prepared for that eventuality as best you can. So, what does that have to do with security? If you can't keep it all secure, you've got nothing really at the end of the day. And you may not be, you may say, no, I live in an area where, yeah, well, if gangs start roaming around like in Haiti and you break down in civil services, that there's just nobody to call like in Haiti. You say, that can't happen here. Really? It could happen right now out in Pocono region of Pennsylvania, 2-3 hours from Philadelphia. If you had some nefarious people put together some simple plans, they could easily overrun probably some significant territory before there any assets could be in place to do anything about it. They say, what are you talking about? I'm talking about gangs of illegal immigrants coming out of North Philadelphia, the Muslim neighborhood where they have four-wheelers, ATVs. Certainly it wouldn't take much to get access to trucks and trailers. They go trailer out there, maybe 3-4 trailers. They take different routes. They meet at a rendezvous point where they got 3 or 4 of these four-wheelers in each trailer with, you know, a guy on each one, armed, protected, and whatever objective, how easily achievable that would be. Wow. Wow. How do they get out of there? I guess you'd have to talk about all that, what the exit plan would be. I don't necessarily see that as a high probability either. What I do see as a high probability is just problems that we really don't know what they're going to be. And I base, and so many people saying that, why? Well, because you can see the breakdown happening. You can see the fractures in the foundation developing. And as long as that's happening, it's leaving us wide open for these security threats. The security threat leads to problems with getting food and fuel and all the things that you need to stay alive and sustain yourself. And all this has to be prepared for on some level. Now you say, man, this is a lot to take in. What do you want me to do? Hey, start with 48, 96 hours. Basic security. Let me go back to that a second. The lighting I brought up, the lighting can be a problem in the other direction. You know that? You're going to sit here and say, man, we're hearing that there's a possibility of gangs coming through. You're going to want to blacken the house and silence the house. Or you could go the other way. Now, see, it would be very difficult for me to do that, say, on a whim. If we had to do it long term, we're set up to do that, to blacken the house. We really are. We have dogs. How do you keep the dogs quiet? How do you live in that environment if you can't run a generator, things like that? We have solar lighting to deal with that, and we could blacken the windows. The solar lighting is a good backup anyway. So all this redundancy creates multiple solutions. But I would say to you, if I were going to provide defense on my house, I would certainly put defense in place at the house, which would have to be my wife if it was just us, and I had the weapon I would give her for that, the weapons and the tools to deal with that, advanced notification when somebody's on the property, for example, and lots of it. And I would probably set up a outlook position away from the property. If things got into that devolved of a scenario, I would watch from a sniper position, and that's where I would create that time and distance. At that point, you know, my wife's in the house and our family, and she hears shooting. We're already going to have that plan predetermined. And if we have communication, all the better. This is, of course, crazy stuff. And like I said, not like we're planning for this or rehearsing for anything. I don't see it as a likely scenario. If we had to put it in place quickly, we would have the ability to do it, and we would. But in the meantime, I'm going to say to you now more than ever, as serious, simple, practical solutions right now today, lighting, I keep talking about, you can easily add side lights to every entry to make sure that you can leave them on like that. We use these 30-watt LEDs. You know, and it's amazing the light that we get off of that. Even without the security lighting on, just our regular lighting that we leave on has our property well lit, and it's very, very important. It's a chore to go around every night and turn it on, and every morning turn it off, but we put that lighting on for important reasons. On top of that, we have the security lighting. But there's two more things that I want to mention to you before I let you go that are huge for home security, building security, property security. So be the same for commercial. Commercial, you should have great lighting. It's on motion sensors. Keep things lit up. But the other thing is the cameras, for God's sake. And it's so inexpensive today to set these up. And you say, well, it's not secure, it's a Wi-Fi. I know, but it's at least going to give you notice that something's going on, even if the feed gets cut. And you say, let me go check it out. The last thing is advanced notification that somebody's on the property. And commercially, you might even want to, you know, aim down the road. Anytime somebody comes down your alley or your drive or your road, you're going to get noticed that somebody's coming down there. I knew a guy that had a house down in North Carolina. down in the Outer Banks. He lived up here in Pennsylvania, and it was his vacation home, and that's what he did. He had the camera face. Anytime anybody came down that private road, man, there's like 6-8 houses down there. He kept an eye on all of it. He knew what was going on. It's a great idea, and it costs next to nothing. Here's what I'm going to tell you. It's an election year. It's going to get worse and worse, more and more chaotic. You're going to see what I'm talking about. And the risk that security problems develop are high, and you don't want to get caught in a situation where you're trying to react to that down the road. Do yourself a favor. You want to be armed. You want to have security inside. It's all well and good. Think about lighting cameras. It'll go a long way to helping you out, that's for sure. And make sure you have a system that notifies you when somebody's on the property, whether it's a camera. I have a buddy that uses an analog system, I don't know. But it's like one of those things that they used to have at the gas station, down at the end of his driveway. You drive over that and bing, bing, the bell goes off in the house. They know somebody's coming on the property. There's lots of ways to do it today. And you can look into all those options, use a combination of them. It's huge. If you're waiting for somebody to show up inside, you're making a big mistake. God willing, I'll be back tomorrow. Sure hope to see that. I mean, that Saturday show, not kidding. God willing, I hope to see you there. Make it a great day.